is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 627. I am, on this last show of July, Miss Lisa Sheps, your host, and I am joined also on this last show of July by my co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello!
You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. During the pandemic, we are homegrown and home recorded. Pre-recorded, that is. We'll be right back. Step out of, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world.
Such fun and feeling fit. Isn't it mad? We never had so much fun. Let's quit.
I feel like it is Wednesday, July 28th, 2021. On the show today, we have those folks in Fredericksburg from the Gaslight Baker Theater talking about their performance of Godspell. And Nicole and I will have lovely discussions over the world of theater in New York, Chicago, London, Japan, and the Borscht Belt. We'll be right back. Nicole, that song that we just listened to is called Pour le Sport.
Pour le Sport. For the Sport.
For the Sport. And do you... I'm assuming you don't recognize the song itself, but do you... Do you recognize the style and who might be the composer of that piece?
It seems very old school. Was that the Candor and Ebb Fun stuff they were doing? But I don't think it was. It didn't sound like them.
No, that was from a up-and-coming writer named Stephen Sondheim.
I almost went there, and then I didn't, just because I knew the Candor Manuel and Manuel stuff was happening, but...
This was from a show that was never produced called The Last Resorts. And I'm just going to read this. This is from Sondheim.com.
Wait, those are original lyrics? That wasn't people just making parody up right now?
No, that was from a show.
Oh.
It was actually in the show, the off-Broadway show, Marry Me a Little.
Oh,
which is a review of Sondheim music. And this show was
then
from
I've
the last.
Hmm.
This show, this song was from The Last Resorts. From Sondheim.com, it says the story was about an author who goes to Florida to write an article about the Duke and Duchess of Windsor. Harold Prince bought the rights because he was interested in adapting it for a musical. Gene Kerr was writing the book. The project, however, was never produced because Sondheim's music didn't fit well with Kerr's book, and because Prince didn't like the book very much anyway.
Oh, well, there you go.
There you go. Pour le Sport was the only song that survived into a show, which was Marry Me Little, which evidently you've seen.
Yeah. And so that's why I'm like, it seemed familiar, but those lyrics didn't. But I, you know, Hot Mess Express pulling into the show today.
There you go. Well, I played that. I mean, that was a long way to get to the reason why I played it. And I'm guessing you know why I played that song.
Why, Lisa?
Bum 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 bum.
Yeah, I normally, you know, I have a big love for.
I know you do. Well, the reason why, the reason why,
my money back.
The reason why I want to talk about them is, and I'm guessing since you're mad at them, you did not see the opening ceremonies.
No, they won't give me my money back, so I'm mad. I'm boycotting the Olympics. So.
Okay, well, I'll go ahead and talk about it, and you can boycott me.
I did boycott you.
I did watch the opening ceremonies, or much of it, and it was, I found it very, very moving. Especially, and I don't know why, I just loved watching these performers, the dancers, and everybody that were out there, and they had so much joy in their hearts and they were having so much fun. I literally, I not only teared up, I cried watching them. Well, there's lots of big news, but I'm going to start. This is relatively big news, but we did have a loss. Jackie Mason passed away after being in the hospital for 2 weeks. And he's been on Broadway several times.
Yeah, he started early, right? Didn't he start in the 60s on Broadway?
Yes, he actually was in a Broadway show. I need to find it because I didn't circle it. But I need to find it. It's actually a very interesting story in that this was a show that had the record for the most previews. And it had like some 80 some odd previews. And then they had the opening night and they closed on the opening night. So I believe they only had one performance.
It was 1969, the play A Teaspoon Every 4 Hours, which he co-wrote, and ran for previews for 97 performances, but upon opening closed after one single night.
And you'd think that these shows that have these long previews would figure it out. That they're not going to survive.
97 is a hearty preview.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. I mean, that's back then as well.
Yeah.
So he also did a lot of his one man shows. I was in New York for one of them, but an interesting one that he did called Politically Incorrect, which was at the same time that Bill Maher had his Politically Incorrect show, and Bill Maher sued and lost.
Because that's what his jam was being politically incorrect before Bill Maher, if you ask me. It's like, come
absolutely
on.
And then one other thing I'd like to point out, it's called the Middle Finger Incident. I'm getting all this from Wikipedia, so you know it's true. But in 1964 in October, he was on the Ed Sullivan Show, and it is purported that he shot Ed Sullivan the finger because Ed Sullivan was standing behind the camera, off camera, but behind it, and gave him a sign that 2 minutes more, ending his set early. And evidently, Jackie Mason didn't like that and had gave him the finger.
Had something to say.
Anyway, so he died on July 24th. He'd been hospitalized for over 2 weeks and got lots of accolades, and he will be missed. That's the end of the era. And that's why I said at the top that we're going to visit the Borscht Belt.
I was just about to say, we should probably reference, this is why you said Borscht Belt earlier.
That is exactly why I said it.
Yeah, he's in some good movies too that you'll recognize. I mean, History of the World Part 1.
Yep. He was also in, oh my God, I forgot the other one he was in. There was another one that he was in that, anyway, very, very, very well known. Something like Mrs. Doubtfire or something. It wasn't that, but something.
No, I know what you're talking about though.
Mr. Mom, I don't know.
No, but I love Mr. Mom. I have it on DVD.
Huge news from the world of equity. Big, big, big news this week. They opened up membership, and it is so interesting to me the amount of backlash Equity has gotten over this from so many different areas. But what I find interesting is I truly believe Equity is doing this to make Equity membership more inclusive, as they have been asked to do. But so many people are saying it's a money grab. And I don't think it is. Oh, and
they lost so many members over the pandemic. And I do think there is a component that they are trying to do good things. I do. But I also think they're like, hey, this is a package deal. We can make all these members. Like, it's not a one-stop shop solve any of these issues. And they made it one.
There may be, but let me just say this. If you are being told over and over and over again by people to do a certain thing, and then when you do it, those same people get angry with you for doing it, that's not fair either. So there may be a piece of that in there, but I truly think, you know, and I don't say a lot of good things about Equity. So I truly think that this was...
I didn't. The statement to me just, I was very careful. Everything was so carefully done that I was like, Yeah, no, this.
Yeah. Well, we can respectfully disagree with one another. I think that they're doing the right thing. And to be clear, so that people that don't know it. So in up until last week, in order to become a member of Equity, you had to be either offered a contract or secured enough points by working on other Equity productions as like an intern or a low paid something or other to merit membership. Once you are able to join, there's a huge initiation fee, and then you can be a member. Then you can go from being on the unemployment rolls of non-equity actors to the unemployment rolls of equity actors. In my day, the only way to get an equity card was to be offered an equity contract. So this is a real, you know, for me personally, it's kind of like, oh, I'm no longer special. And that's the other thing that I was thinking of. But they've opened this up to anybody who has been paid for their profession, any actor or stage manager that's been paid for their profession for a period of 2 years. This is going to go on. They believe that they will renew it after that 2 year period. Furthermore, they're going to give you 3 years to pay off that initiation fee, which didn't used to be the case.
Yeah,
you
could not. There were some things like that. I was like, oh, okay. I just don't know how theaters are going to be able to withstand now and have all these contracts or not be able to work with different people that are smaller stuff. I think there's a lot. I don't think this was thought through properly, but I like that the forward thinking on some of this stuff.
Again, I'm not so sure I agree with you on the thought through process, but there are big implications. So it's going to make open calls incredibly dense with people. There was an expectation that if you're a cast member, you had to add that asterisk by your name as a member of Actors Equity. It insinuated a certain amount of quality. Whether that's true or not, that was the insinuation. That's gonna be lessened. Also, I think there's going to be, you know, what does it mean to be, and I'm using air quotes, paid for your profession? If I get $25 for playing Cinderella at a party, does that make me a professional? So I think there's a lot of other things
that I'm like, huh?
Yeah. I think it brings up a lot of questions, but I do think that it's a brave step that Equity's taking, whether it is the right step or whatever the motivations behind it were. I applaud them for doing it. Once upon a time, if you let your Equity membership lapse, you could not rejoin without a contract, and now you can. So
you can stop it now. You used to not be able to like put a hold on it. I think.
Yeah, I did. On hold for almost 20 years. Yeah, and then I reinstated it. Not all that long ago, about 7-8 years ago, I reinstated my Equity because I wanted to go back on Broadway.
No, I remember when you reinstated it. I didn't realize you had it on hold that whole time too. I thought that was something in the last like 30 years they did.
No, if you officially go inactive, if you tell them you're going to go inactive,
right,
then you were good. And I don't know whether that was what it was for me. So, but I will say that this is a game changer for actors in New York and maybe LA and Chicago. But I think I do think that in cities like Austin, the Equity membership is more of a hindrance than a help. But that's up to the individual actor and or stage manager. But, you know, when I moved to New York as a stage manager and performer, your first goal was to get your union card. And then after that, you could start your career.
Yep. Yeah.
So I think that's big news.
It is big news. Oh yeah. I totally agree.
So now that we're, you know, just talking about, things that just like do's and don'ts. I saw this article and I have to say, I saw it because I was searching for something we're going to talk about. You sent me a blog about, do you need star power in musicals, which we are going to talk about, but not right now.
No, I just loved it. I was like, did she get it? Maybe she's waiting.
But I went looking for the original piece so that I could print it out. because I couldn't with what you sent me. There was no link. So it's from the OnStage blog, but then I looked through it. I never found that, but I did find the do's and don'ts of talkbacks. And people that listen to this show, people that talk to this, that listen to the show probably know that I'm not a big fan of talkbacks. But I found this interesting that they talk about the do's and don'ts. And this blog post was written more for audiences and patrons than professionals. So it's not how to do a talkbacks, it's how do you behave. Because one of the things that really bothers me about talkback audiences is this question, which happens every time. How did you memorize all those lines? So they talk about not asking questions like that.
So you were down with this piece then, I'm assuming, like they were answering things you're annoyed at?
A little bit, but they have do's and don'ts. And do's are things like be polite. It says questions are better than comments, because that's another one that bugs me. This isn't a question.
Me too.
This is a comment. I just loved your costume in Act 3.
Or unless you say thank you for your time or thank you for your performance, I'd like to know. That's a little different to me. But yes, I get it.
Yeah. And then one of the do's is ask about some of the technical elements that audiences don't typically ask about. Like, tell me about, what about the costumes that blah, blah, blah. Don't ask actors why their choices were so lame.
Someone has done that. OMG. You really have to write that? That's awful. Why would someone do that?
Yeah. Don't try to be cutesy with your questions. Just come out. But then as a bonus on this, they give you 9 questions that you could possibly ask, which I think is great. I'll give you a few of them. One question, what research did you do to more deeply understand your character or the play?
Oh, that's a good one.
That is a great question, because that's something that audiences typically don't hear about.
We could ask people too.
It's true. Why do you think this show is relevant to these times? Why perform it now?
That's a good question.
Well, and that's one we asked. We ask that a lot.
That one, and I've heard that before to talk back.
So, and then just one more. I'm just picking these randomly. So. What would you do differently if you got another opportunity to perform this role?
Ooh.
Yeah. So I found that interesting. And I am going to now switch to that question that you sent me. Do you need a star in a musical?
Not just a star in a musical, but a star in a musical that doesn't really vocally sing.
Well, the point of the thing was, do you need a box office star? And they said specifically, we've heard Hugh Jackman and Anna Kendrick just so much. How much can they do to carry a show? But it's interesting. And what they said, and unfortunately, I can't find the article anymore, which had a lot of really good stuff. But one of the things that they said that they were taking as a point of this was the box office receipts of In the Heights, which critics and audiences loved. The one thing to say, and I wish I had the article open. So if you have it open, well, I can find it in your thing, or you can open it yourself and I'll ask you the questions. They're talking about the grosses. I believe it made $40 million versus Les Mis, which made $160 million, something like that. I'm making up those numbers. But they went through all...
In the Heights stands at $40 million, just under 30 of that coming domestically. Les Mis was $440 million. Mamma Mia, $609 million. And right. Yeah, Mamma Mia, $395 million. Oy, that's a lot. Even Cat got $75 million.
Which I find amazing, because yeah. I don't know anybody that has watched that.
That's the one that made me go, what?
So this blog post is basically saying, yes, you need the box office star power to make money doing this. I will say this, and the article writer did mention that In the Heights was shown on HBO Max, but they don't think that that really reflects the low box office grosses, that they think it would, if there were a huge box office star in that show, then there might have had better notices.
I think they would have gotten up to Cats if it was back.
Well, one would certainly hope.
But like, I think they would have beat Cats. Come on.
But it saddens me. And your note to me was, do you think you need it? And your answer was, no, we don't need them. And I agree with you, because what I loved about In the Heights was the new talent that I got to see.
And it wasn't all just new. That's just it. You knew who people were or connected, and it made you want to learn about other works. And even people you knew, you went back and revisited what they did or realized, I didn't know they did that. And there were so many things that came out of that were beautiful.
And I totally agree with you, but I don't think you and I are the audiences that the filmmakers of the world are striving for.
No, because we're so perfectly amazing.
That's true. So I pose this question to you, and I just thought of it myself. So would you rather...
Oh, we're playing Would You Rather?
Not have any more movie musicals with box office stars that can't sing? Or would you rather have more movie musicals?
I can't deal with people who can't sing. So I think I'd live on the ones that are out there that I'd like, and I'd be okay, Lisa.
So you'd be okay with no movie musicals?
If we're going to keep having people that can't sing, yes.
Okay. I don't think, surprise, I don't agree because the film, let's just finish my thought here. Filmmaking is the art of the director. So to me, it's less about individual. I mean, yes, they're amazing individual performances, but without that director's hand, I mean, then you lose it. And I think a good director, see, I didn't hate La La Land. I didn't hate some of the other shows that didn't have great voices in them. I didn't hate The Greatest Showman, although that had Hugh and a lot of really great voices.
It had great voices in it. I just hated the movie. I wasn't mad at who was cast at the movie. I just didn't like The Greatest Showman.
No, okay.
Are you kidding me? Like, there was some... I saw Kelly Settle perform with Hugh live and was like off my rocker excited she was performing numbers from the movie. Don't like the movie.
Okay, that's fair enough.
But I also think there are a lot of Hollywood actors and even very famous ones that people don't know sing. True. And not just sing really well. So why you cast the it person or hot moment of that week instead of someone who is constantly still making movies, we know who can sing and they can still draw on a box office. Why aren't we working with that talent pool?
I think people might disagree with you on the box office draw of those things, but I hear you and understand it. And I agree with you again. You and I aren't making the movies.
No, and I don't want to.
Well, neither do I, as I've been.
I do not. Someone else, thank you.
Exactly. Well, let's go to break. And just keeping with what we've done, we are going to play another song from Schmigadoon, which had its new one. And I believe, yes, we're gonna listen to Anne Harada sing "He's a Queer One." That man, oh mine. Here it is.
Some men like to fight and curse.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa.
And Nicole.
And you are listening to us on Co-op Radio. And we are pre-recorded, folks. Well, that was a, I think that was a really great first half of our show. We had a lot of really great conversations.
We did.
We're going to have to be pretty, what's the word I'm trying to come up with? We're going to have to be fast in this second section.
Wicked concise.
Yep. Wicked and concise. Adrienne Warren, did you read that she's coming back to Tina, the Tina Turner musical?
And when she made the comment up, like her post was like, this is the fourth time I've had to get ready. My body can't do this again or something. I giggled so hard and I was like, go girl, go.
So that is good news. Also, the other thing I want to talk about, this has been going around. I don't know where I saw it. I think it was BroadwayWorld.com or one of those. The Lion King West End table read. Did you see this video?
No, I did not.
There will be a link to it on offstageonair.com.
What did they do?
It is an amazing table read. It was their first rehearsal coming back for the West End. And it was Circle of Life. You know, my favorite song. And I know that's probably...
he's going to come running from the other room like you're calling to him.
But this was the table read, and it had and I wish I had the actor's name who sang that. It had, the camera was right on her, and it starts a cappella. So you hear the pianist give her the note, and she sits there and she gets choked up and she backs away. And then we watch her get choked up, and then she calls for the note again. And then she lets it out and they start singing this song. And the back and forth with the African music is so amazing and so beautiful. And I was again brought to tears watching it. I was really great. So they play the whole song. The first 2 minutes of it, they're actually, the video matches what they're saying. After that, it's a montage of just that day's rehearsal and all the people working together and the joy coming from the room about getting in a room and starting to work on stuff is just amazing.
I love The Lion King. It could play forever and I'd be totally okay with that. It's every time you see it, it's like the first time again. It's just the music, the visual, like, just everything about it. What is it about it?
Totally agree. All right, let's leave this and go to our first and only guest. Shall we?
Let's.
So we talked to the folks doing Godspell at Gaslight Baker Theater in
Lockhart.
Oh my God. In Lockhart. Oh, boy. I'll tell you. My brain. Let's just listen. Nicole, I have an apology to make.
What apology do you have to
make? Well, I have this feeling that you think that I've been gaslighting you for the past few weeks.
You always are.
Well, I haven't been. Well, what I was trying to get at is we have here on the show folks from Gaslight Baker Theater in Lockhart, Texas.
It's very exciting. I love the Lockhart.
I know. I'm very excited. I mean, they shot our favorite movie, Waiting for Guffman, there.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did.
And there's good barbecue.
There is a lot of good barbecue. And that Ace Hardware store is really good. I got a nice gorilla cart there.
Love that, Ace. Well, thank you guys for being on the show. It's all the time we have.
Oh.
Just teasing. So let's introduce who's here with us. We have Jason Jones, who's the director of this show, which we should say is Godspell, and also the chair of the board of directors of Gaslight Baker. Hi, Jason.
Hey, Lisa.
And we have many of the cast members. We have Becca Smoots. Hi, Becca.
Hi, nice to be here.
We have Allison Engel.
Hi.
David Kelly. Hi, David.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. And welcome back to the show, Doug Girolamo. How'd I do?
You were so close. Di Girolamo. But it's Girolamo. Good to be back.
It's really not that difficult.
10 letters and 5 syllables.
And folks will remember Doug when he came in. We were talking about, oh my God, yeah. What's the name of the show?
To Kill a Mockingbird. Yeah.
And the whole Scott Rudin fiasco. And we talked about this beforehand, before we went on the air, that unfortunately between Scott Rudin and COVID-19, that show just went belly up.
Unfortunately, yeah.
As did, unfortunately, that theater company.
Yes.
Well, my condolences. I mean, that's never good news to talk about. So.
No, it was a hard process, but we all sort of realized that it was for the best. And who knows? We might try again later.
Awesome. I hope you do. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about Godspell. And this is based on the 2012 revival of Godspell. Starring Hunter Foster was in it, I believe. Am I right, Nicole?
Yeah.
Hunter Parrish.
I do that all
Hunter
the time.
Hunter Foster is a very different man than Hunter Parrish.
It's the Hunter in me. So Jason, talk about this production of Godspell that you guys are opening at Gaslight Baker.
Well, I tell you what, Lisa, last year we planned on, of course, like everyone, having a normal season. And it was actually the 100-year celebration of our theater, which opened in 1920. So we had set up a whole season of things that we thought would be great for our community and a big draw. And, of course, we ended up changing everything, as did everyone. So when we started looking at what we wanted to try and reopen with this year, we wanted to do a musical, and we already had everything done and ready for Godspell. And then what would it be in about 50 years since it was originally put together? And then wanting to do something hopeful, uplifting, energetic, trying to come up out of COVID, which, of course, is promised to, and it looks out to be a little bit more complicated than we expected. But there you go.
Go ahead.
But yeah, that was the plan. I think we've talked a lot about trying to rebuild, not just from a COVID standpoint, but just from a national ugly polarization kind of standpoint. So
sure. I mean, it's a beautiful story. And of course, everybody's, it's a whole bunch of allegories from the Bible. As they say, and I think most people or many people are familiar with the movie and have probably at least seen one production of it in their lifetime. So let's just go around and see who everybody's playing. Becca, who do you play?
Well, in our version, we're all playing ourselves, but my character based on the revival is Lindsay.
And what is it? Do you have a song?
Yes, my song is Bless the Lord.
Bless the Lord. Awesome. Doug, you?
Oh, me. Yeah, I'm singing Light of the World. I close out Act One for us.
And are you also, you are also playing yourself?
Yes. I'm awesome. Also playing a big challenge.
it would be hard for me. Allison?
Yes, I'm also playing myself. I sing the song Day by Day. The show.
Day by Day. That would be the one I would want to sing. And I should tell our radio audience that she is wearing Baby Yoda on her chest for those that are fans of that. And David Kelly, who do you play?
Well, I get the opportunity to be someone other than myself. I actually get to play Jesus during this production. And so
what a fun role. And so in your production, so you have Jesus and then somebody plays Judas and one of the apostles. I'm Jewish, so forgive me.
Yeah.
John the Baptist.
It's all good. Call them what you want.
So how I mean, we are all, you know, the picture of Jesus in Godspell with the iconic Superman T-shirt are pretty big shoes to fill. So how have you made this character your own?
Yeah, that was one of my initial fears. Just coming into this role, I've been out of theater for 5 years, and Jason calls me up and says, hey, do you want to play Jesus? And that was my initial reaction was, oh no, that's a lot.
let the radio audience know that his eyes just widened.
And so I, you know, that was, once I got over that initial shock and had that initial conversation with Jason, I realized I really want to bring as much of myself to this role as I possibly can, but I get to kind of pour into the story that's already been set and obviously is pretty well known. And so, you know, once I kind of got my head around the fact that I didn't have to be the Jesus that everybody is looking for and that everybody expects, then it really opened doors and allowed me to kind of have some freedom to just make it my own.
Wonderful. And one of your songs is Learn Your Lessons Well. Is that correct?
I get to be a part of it. Yeah.
I get to be a part of
that one. That is, yep. We have an awesome cast member named Ella who takes the lead there, but yeah, it's a
awesome. Well, you guys sent in a recording of that. So why don't we just take a moment and play it now?
I can see a swath of sinners sitting yonder and they're acting like a pack of fools. Gazing into space, they let their minds all wander instead of studying the good Lord's rules. You better pay attention, build your comprehension. There's gonna be a quiz at your ascension.
Not to mention any threat of hell. But if you're smart, you'll learn your lessons well.
Every bright description of the promised land, and you can reach it if you keep alert.
Learning every mind and every last commandment may not help you, but it couldn't hurt.
Well, first you gotta read 'em, then you gotta heed 'em. You never know when you're gonna need 'em. Just as old Elijah said to Jezebel, you better start to learn your lessons well.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Yes, thank you.
It was our pleasure.
You know, it's for just to talk a little bit about offstage and on the air, because that's what we like to do. You know, since the pandemic, we haven't been in the studio and we haven't been able to have live music. And I think, Nicole, this is our first even recording of a piece that we're talking to since we've been out of the studio.
So. That's what I was sitting here thinking about. That's part of why I was like, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Because we haven't had that. I think maybe one other time, but nothing really, not a full song. I think we got a snip or a tease.
We may have had a snip or a tease. So what has been, you know, one of the questions we ask a lot is why now? But you answered that earlier. So tell us what's been, this is a question for anybody. What's been special and or challenging about doing Godspell at this moment in time?
Well, I think that just the fact that we've all been placed on pause for the last year plus, wondering, is theater ever going to be the same? Are we ever going to get the opportunity to share our passion for performing with others? And as soon as I heard audition, at least for me personally, as soon as I heard auditions were opening up, I'm like, holy cow, my rump is going to be there and I'm going to be auditioning the heck out of it.
What about some others? Allison, how has it been for you?
Godspell is actually one of my favorite musicals. I grew up listening to the soundtrack and watching the movie with my grandmother. So like, it's been like so amazing to get to work with this cast. And like the first time that we sang together, all without masks on, and just got to harmonize with each other. It was just amazing. And also just like, I think this show brings like such joy, not only to us performers, but also the audience as well. And I'm just so excited that we get to share that with everybody.
And Jason, tell us about your approach to this production as director.
Oh, goodness. I tell you what, just in directing in general, while I'm casting, I'm looking for specific, almost personalities, not just for the people that are going to fit the roles. And this is a community theater thing, right? That I guess comes with it. But I really like to meet individually with these guys, and I like to understand where they want to go with the characters. And I really approach everything in a very collaborative way. And so that's been good. So we get a lot of mix of personality. Allison actually helped out with the lighting plot the other day. David and I have spent a lot of time talking, obviously. So that's pretty much been the approach.
It sounds like your approach is a character-based approach.
Certainly is.
Wonderful. And tell us about, several things. You know, you're going to open in July. What's the date that you open?
July 30th,
which is just
off
around.
I was going to say the 29th. That was close.
You were so close, Nicole. If you were a hand grenade or a horseshoe, you would have won.
Maybe.
So, well, as you all know, the COVID-19 has reared its ugly head again. And we have in Austin here, we're in stage 4 again. Many people are masking up again. What have you guys been doing with regards to COVID mitigation as a cast and company? And what are you doing for COVID mitigation for the audience members that are coming to the show?
Well, as cast and company, of course, we just started running into the Delta news in a real way. And we did talk early on that, you know, getting back on stage and doing a musical was probably, at least for the cast, the most dangerous thing that we could be doing. So we talked about it on the front end, and although I didn't give the whole, you know, you are required to be vaccinated speech, I think it was pretty much understood from the outset. And even during auditions, we made sure people knew, look, this is kind of what we're looking for. It's we knew we'd be pushing just a little bit early. And so part of it was reliance on the a big part of it's been reliance on the vaccination of our cast. As far as what we're going to do coming up, we just at least I wish I could give you a better answer at this point. We just started talking about it. My assumption is, having had a couple of conversations with board members, is that we will approach it the same way we have for the last year and a half, and that is we'll start by looking at our local numbers within Caldwell County and kind of see what we need to do. Right now, it's mostly a question of whether or not we're going to request for people and encourage people to wear a mask, especially if they're mm-hmm. unvaccinated, are we going to use a little bit stronger language? And that's the conversation right now. What we're not planning on doing is going back to 25% or any of the crazy things that we tried last year at this point. But, you know, again,
ever changing landscape.
It really
is. It
is
indeed.
Right?
And will you be updating your website as we go? So if I'm a potential customer and want to come see the show, will I get a clear idea of what's expected of me from your website?
You certainly should. My website manager is in Germany currently.
Not a good place to be right now.
No. And he should be back. In fact, tomorrow. Our plan is to make it as public as possible. So,
It is a hard thing, and I'm glad to see that you're taking the steps that you need to do. Tell us again when you open and how long you run and where folks can go to get more information.
We open July 30th. We will run through August 15th. I'm not looking at my dates here, on the weekends. And for more information, you can go to mygbt.org.
Awesome. I want to talk about MyGBT for a second. because I'm not sure that we've had Gaslight on before, but Gaslight Baker Theater is really the conglomeration of Gaslight Theater and the Baker Theater, is it not?
Yes.
Which happened about 5, 6, 7 years ago, something like that?
Well, longer than that. It's been about 2010, I believe.
Time is going by too fast.
I know.
It flies when you're having fun.
But I've been, ever since that y'all did that, I've been wanting to have you on, because what a great thing to do is to, I mean, not that Lockhart can't support two theaters, but what a great thing to do to bring the two companies together under one umbrella.
David Schneider was our artistic director, I believe, early on, and president of the board back at that time. And he really put it together. He had started the Gaslight Company elsewhere in town, and he brought a group in with very much more professional attitude and direction. And we took that and the old Lockhart Community Theater kind of spirit and managed to put it together. And yeah, it's been a great thing. And boy, that we're really happy and blessed to be in our theater, which is just awesome and big and haunted and fun. So.
Great. And I know if you look up the Gaslight Baker Theater, you get a lot of stuff on the internet that shows pictures, and it was a movie house for a while. So that's amazing. And I'm glad that you were able to make it through the COVID-19 times. I run a venue as well, and we know how difficult it was has been, and how ground floor theater would not have made it through without the help of a lot of recovery dollars that we got. So I'm assuming you took advantage of some of those opportunities as well.
We certainly did. And we've got a good group of donors that helped us out as well.
That's great.
Well great. I'm happy to have you on. I hope this isn't the last time we get the show, the theater back on the show. Oh, and I should say also this, that it has been, you know, Gaslight Baker isn't known for doing musicals. It's been a long time since you've done a musical.
7 years, I believe, since the last one they did.
Wow.
It's been quite a while.
In the spirit of Godspell and in the spirit of my family, I will say to you, Mazel Tov.
Thank you.
So best of luck with the show. And we're going to leave with another recording of the show, which is Light of the World. Who sings Light of the World?
Oh, that would be me.
That would be you. And that would be Doug. Don't make me pronounce your last name.
That's okay. Yeah. Me, Doug. It's me and the rest of the company.
Well, great. Well, let's go away with listening to Doug singing Light of the World. And I want to thank you guys for being on Offstage and on the Air.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having us.
Let's talk about this. Did you read about the Williamstown Theater Festival kerfuffle?
No, I'm kind of perplexed. I'm not sure how I missed this. What happened?
Well, I'm going to tell you. So the Williamstown Theater Festival, oh my God, where's Williamstown? What town? Where is that? It's in the Berkshires. Mm-hmm. We're doing an outdoor version of the show, the musical called Row. And members of the audio crew walked out on July 14th. And they were saying that they had an absurd work schedule and their hourly pay was bad. And they were asked to work in very, very dangerous conditions. Specifically, there was a major rains, very similar to what we had here. They had to keep setting up and tearing down based on the rains. And they were being asked to work and work and work at a $15 an hour rate. And they... Okay. Have an undisclosed term, but they think they came up with an $18 an hour fee for them. And obviously at least 8 hours of time off. But I just think this sounds awful. And here's the deal. Part of the terrible hours that the crew had to take was, this was done on the Clark Museum's grounds. And they said nobody could be working when patrons are present. So they had to do all this setup and tear down at hour.
When all the storms were really hitting and going bananas. This is just absolutely is it really mind blowing in this world these days? But it is
mind
blowing.
They had no place to go if it started to rain. They had no shelter or not enough shelter. It's very interesting to me, and as someone that produces theater, and we understand that there's not a lot, that we don't make a lot of money in the nonprofit world. But if you can't compensate people to where they need to be compensated, if you just can't do it, then you damn well better be treating them like gold. And ignorance goes just so far. I mean, they did not do a proper research on how to do an outdoor show, and we think, and I could be as guilty of this as anybody. We think that, we just take the show and do it outdoors. There's no difference. And it's not as simple as just taking a show, plopping it from one place, putting it outdoors. There's a lot more to think about, or different things to think about, outdoors versus indoors. So shame on Williamstown Theater Festival, and hopefully they'll get better in the future. And with that, you have spent an hour with Lisa and Nicole, and we appreciate you listening. Go get vaccinated. And we'll see you next week when we look at what's happening offstage and on the air.
Au revoir.